To put numbers.
Okay. So the shear has two parts. Okay, so the first part is special relativity. And I'm just trying to do one idea from special relativity. And there's like a lot of different ways of saying it. And the main thing is to get the concept. And you don't really need to understand this idea from special relativity in order to understand the second part, which is really going to be, I'm going to try to take the idea of time from special relativity and show how that has relevance for Hilchos Tshuva. Okay, and Shofar and the world to come. But like, you don't really need to grasp the first part in order to be able to appreciate the second part, but like, it's cool if you can actually, you can get it. You know, it's cool. And also look, and the idea is like, it's a little bit, it's not, there's no real mathematics in it, but it's like a concept. And, but like, it should, if you never heard the idea before, it's like a pretty, it's a pretty different, radical, different new idea of time that, that like it should, you know, it'll take time for it to set in anyway. It's not going to be able to, in an hour, be able to necessarily shift your whole framework, okay? But it's not that bad, okay? So the first thing, I'm going to try to do it in really a couple stages, the special relativity point. The first, I'm basically going to say, start off with the idea, okay? It's a hakira. There's two ways of looking at time, okay? And this is, there's a chapter in Einstein's book where he kind of goes through it, his book of the evolution of physics, like around chapter page 200. Okay, so first let me start with a quote from Einstein, and this is the quote that you have to base. The point is to understand what does he mean by this line. Okay, so the quote is like this. He says, "For us believing physicists, the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubborn but persistent illusion." Okay. So the distinction between past, present, and future, that whole idea that you have in your mind of, oh, good. You're on time. Don't worry about it. You're on time. No, we didn't start. Okay, good.
Coach, that's
fine. Okay, so we're starting with a quote from Einstein. Okay, here's the quote from Einstein. Is that, for us believing physicists, the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubborn yet persistent illusion. Okay? So that's the quote. We're going to try to make sense of that. So the first part of this year. Okay? So basically like this. This is, we got a nice little chalkboard over here. There's basically two ways of looking at time. Okay? And this is not contingent at all on relativity. This is something, even in classical physics, there's simply just two ways that a person can conceive of time, okay? In classical physics, okay, and just the way a person, you know, they're equivalent. They're just equivalent ways of viewing the world. And in special relativity, it matters. It matters which way you look at it. One has more objective value than the other, okay? But the two ways are called, Einstein calls them the dynamic way and the static way, okay? So it's a pretty simple example. The example here is of you going to the top of a building that's 256 feet in the air, right? It's one dimension here, and you're going to drop a stone. Okay, so it's at, okay. So one way of looking at the dynamic way, okay, is that at each second, right, you're going to have a column on the left is the time continuum time, which 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 seconds, okay? And the column on the right, where it's separate, is going to be the height in feet above the ground, okay? So at time t equals 0, when I let go of the rock, it's 256 feet above the air, above the ground, right? Now, 1 second later, it's 240 feet. 2 seconds, 192. 3 seconds, 112. It's accelerating, it's gravity, it's going faster. And at 4 seconds, it hits the ground. Okay? This is the dynamic. Pretty simple, right? It's not so bad. Okay, it's a dynamic. What does it mean by dynamic? What's the constant dynamic? It means that every second, every new moment in time, the thing changes. The position of the thing is changing. Right? So for 1 second, it's 240 feet. And then in the next second, it's at a different spot. So it's the as dynamic as means like it means like change. As time flows, right? There's like a flow of time, right? As time flows, things change. Pretty simple, right? Why not? It's pretty simple. Okay, fine. Another totally equivalent way of looking at it is a static way, okay? Where instead of treating this as like two separate, one-dimensional continuums, two separate one-dimensional axes, where I have time on one column and then I have space on another, I can put them together on a graph, okay? So I have a two-dimensional graph, looks like a piece of graph paper here, where I have a vertical axis, which is the space, and the horizontal axis, which is the time. And I can just plot, right, and I have 100 feet, 200 feet, that's on the vertical, and then I have time in seconds along the bottom. And you can make a point at the intersection of, at 0 seconds, 256 feet, you can put a little dot. Then you can put another dot at 1 second, 240 feet. You know, you put the dots, and then you connect the dots, you end up with a curve. And this basically tells you the exact same information. It's a little better because it's continuous, right? It's a continuous curve. So at any point, at 2.5 seconds, you can kind of go up here and see how high is the thing. It's somewhere between 192, 112, so it's 140 or something. So basically, at every point in time, I know exactly a point in space, okay? So what I've done here is you've taken a unit of 1 second, and you've made it equivalent to like a certain distance on this graph. And a unit of 100 feet, you've made it equivalent to another distance. Right? And basically, well, what you're doing is you're looking at the path of this one-dimensional object falling, right? This object falling ends up being like a curve, a little bit parabolic, because it's accelerating. But you're not looking at any particular moment in time as being more special than the other. You're looking at the entire path of the rock falling in a static way, as it is, from 0 to 4 seconds.
What do you mean by static?
Static means it's not changing. It's not changing. This tells you the entire history of the object falling.
How is it not changing?
And what is dynamic?
A dynamic way of looking at it is basically saying that as each moment, as time flows, the rock is at a different height. Things change. Every moment in time, time changes. So the objects in space move around. They're different. But a static way of looking at it is basically putting time and space together, like we're doing right here on this graph, putting time and space together as like one to two dimensional graph, and I'm looking at it in almost like a fixed eternal way. It's not changing.
How is it not changing?
It's not changing. This is what it is. This is what the path looks like.
And the rock is still falling.
This is what a falling rock looks like. If you look at it in like a static way, where you treat it, you don't treat it like any moment in time. You don't treat it like each moment in time changes. You're treating
the flow.
There's no
stream of water falling from a waterfall. That's how you look at it. It's continuous. It's not necessarily.
No. Well, here, you see, over here we have in the dynamic way is this is obviously this is the chop here is to look at the static way. Okay, that's the shift. Just the two ways of looking at it. But it's
there's no now in the static. Is that the point?
Yeah, there's no now. That's the whole key. The key, the whole thing is there's no now.
What does that mean? It's zero.
That's because you're focusing on a particular part of the curve.
Okay,
but you see the whole curve at once. That's your point.
Yeah, you're looking at the whole curve at once. Okay, but let me. So this is the basic chiluk. Let me try to. This is the concept you have to get. Okay, it's not. We're gonna try to say it in a couple different ways. And basically, it's to get this chakir, these two ways of looking at time. Okay? Okay, fine. Okay, so let me give you two mashals that I think will help. Okay? The way Newton conceived of space and time were as absolute entities. So you have this space, which we can look at as like a big stage. Okay? And there are these objects that live on the stage. Okay? People, trees, whatever it is, right? Bald rocks falling. And then you have separately a big clock in heaven ticking away. Okay? At every moment it ticks, you look at the stage and you look at these objects, And at every moment, it's frozen. Right? Every moment, if you freeze that clock, if you stop the clock every moment, you can look at the object and see where they are. And if you let the clock tick another second, the objects will be in a little bit of a different place. And as each moment ticks by, the picture on the stage is going to be different. Okay? The other way to look at it is not by looking at it as objects on a stage, but it's to look at it as events. Okay? What's interesting, an object and an event? Okay, an event is something that occurs in at a particular point in space at a particular moment in time. Okay? So I can look, let's say, a clap. Okay? So that's an event. It occurs over here at this that particular point in time. Right? Now, what you can do is instead of looking at as objects moving, what you can really look at it as one event causing the next event. Right? Where I can kind of look at this rock falling as I could look at it as a sequence of events. And each event causes the next one, right? But there's no real particular moment which is more real than any other moment. It's all equally real. I'm looking at the entire chain of events, and I'm looking at them as a whole, okay? Well, the way I like to look at this is if you imagine, instead of looking at, I like the imagery of like a tapestry. You guys know what tapestry is? Okay, so if you look at basically the entire universe, okay, if you look at like a tapestry that we'll pretend it's, you know, over here behind me here. So if you look at it, if you imagine trying to read the tapestry from like left to right. So if you look at the beginning of the left, you're going to see a picture of like the universe of the Big Bang. And as you move over towards the right, you're going to see galaxies starting to form. And then you're going to see planets starting to form. And then as you move over in the tapestry, as you read it, you're going to see the history progress, right? And then you're going to see people being born. Then you're going to see Avraham Avinu at one point, right? And then as you keep moving further to the right, you're progressing in time. You'll see Sinai, and then at some point you'll see us over there, and then you'll see the future people, right? But it's an ordering of events. As you read the tapestry from left to right, you're seeing a progression of an order of events go from left to right. But I can look at it in a static way. I can look at it in front of my eyes, look at the whole thing all at once. And that's what it means, like a static way of looking at it. I can look at the entire history of the universe as it progresses over time, but I can behold it in front of my eyes. I can look at it as one existence.
In your first example, what was the significance of the static model being viewed as a series of causal steps? Why were you emphasizing the idea of one thing causing the next?
One thing causing the next. Because what it ends up being is when you look at it in a static way, what you're really doing is you're putting space and time together, and you're treating them equally, basically. Right? What becomes is like over here we've in the dynamic way we've separated space and time to two separate columns. Right? They're separate. Space is separate from time. Right?
Okay.
But in the static way, look, it's like one graph, and like this area in the graph, it's a combination of the two. It's space and time. You're putting them together.
Okay.
So the separation, what's the separation between these two things? Is it, are they separated by space, or are they separated by time?
Both.
Both, together. It's a separation of space and time.
Okay.
As one, so...
And if you put two boxes in between two and three, there'd be a separation between space, it'd be affected by both.
What do you mean?
Let's say you put a blank boxes in between two and three to represent 2.5 and
okay.
150.
Right.
But that's what it would be. It would just be 2.5 and 150.
You haven't changed what you're looking at.
Yeah.
You've just broken it up into finer points.
Well, you still have two separate columns. Each, this column is a column of time, and this column is a column of space. But in this way of viewing it, you're putting it space and time together. That's what you're really doing. You're putting space and time together. You're treating them almost equally. Okay? And what ends up happening is, well, think about the mashal of the tapestry. It's a good way of looking at it. Okay? Is you're looking at the entire history. You're looking at a history of the world. Right? But you're looking at it all at once.
So why in that model were you stressing causality? I still don't follow that.
Oh, because that ends up being how you relate to events.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, one event called, well, what creates an order? Like, why am I reading the tapestry from left to right? I'm starting from the Big Bang and then I'm progressing galaxies and planets and
right.
then humans, right? Why am I doing that? What sense is there? If there's no, basically there's no idea of an absolute time where there's a clock ticking.
Okay, so it gives you a direction.
It gives you a direction of events. But
that
direction,
only gives you a direction in a static
right,
model.
Because
okay.
there's a cause and an effect, cause
right.
and effect. All you really have is you have an ordering, the events are ordered, that a cause precedes the effect. But you don't have any particular absolute idea of a moment in time where like reality is up to a particular moment.
Yep.
Okay. Meaning like this. Okay. So it's like I said, you're gonna have to I'm gonna talk around it for a while until at some point hopefully you guys cop it, okay? Okay. Let me try to explain the Einstein point right now. Okay, so, okay, in the dynamic way of looking at it, the old way of looking at it, okay, I shouldn't say the old way, because there really was always two ways, okay, is you believe, okay, that this moment right now, this year, is where reality is up to. This is where time is up to, right? And the past doesn't really exist anymore. And the future is yet to occur. Correct? It doesn't even occur. The future doesn't even occur. It exists yet. But we are real right now because time is up to us. Right? You hear that? Does that make sense to you?
I'm waiting to.
Okay.
Yes, yes, I know what you mean.
There's an absolute idea of time.
Yes.
And as time ticks,
future is unwritten.
The future is unwritten and the past no longer is.
Right.
Because as the clock in the absolute clock in heaven ticks, that which was goes out of existence and a new reality comes into being. Right? It's a new becoming. And we are real, fortunate for us. We are real right now. Right? This is our moment. Right? In the static way of looking at it, okay, there's no sense in saying that any particular moment is more real than the next.
Right.
It's like you're looking at the tapestry. Is there any sense to saying
one
that
section is more real than the other?
Yeah, it all exists equally. Are we more real than Avraham Avinu? Are we more real than a moment in our future of Yemos Mashiach? It's all on the tapestry. There's no moment where there's no point in time which has any absolute significance as being more special than all the rest.
Okay.
Like you got that's the
yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense. Okay, fine.
Abram is as real as me.
Right. And
not that he was, so that he is.
No, he is.
He was as real as you.
Abram Avinu
is
just as real as you are.
That's the difference. That's the whole point.
That's the chab. Right. And the future is just as real.
To me, it doesn't matter. It's a chab.
Well, the other way of thinking about it is he doesn't exist anymore. He did exist, but he doesn't
right.
exist anymore.
Like there's a greater reality to the present than to the past or the future.
Yeah.
In the dynamic way of looking at it, like the present is what's real, and the past is just history. It's like something we might know about or we have a record of, but it's not real anymore. In this way of looking at it, like every past, present, future is there's no objective reality to that division that you make. Okay, you make a division because you.
How would the future be as real as right now if it hasn't happened? That's
the whole point. It has.
Because that's exactly that. What does it mean the future hasn't happened? That's simply relative to you. Relative to you right now, in this particular moment, is the future has yet to occur. Okay? But you are not in, you have no objective significance. Why you're no more special than Avraham Avinu is. Relative to Avraham Avinu, you don't exist. You're the future. Right? Now, you're no more special than him. There's no objective thing you can do to determine that reality is real right now. Right? Avraham Avinu thought it was now also. It's always now. Right? Haven't you ever noticed that it's always now? Doesn't it? It's always.
Never changes.
It's always now. Okay? What does it mean it's always now? It means there is no now. Okay? That's the concept. Okay? That's the contradiction. You have to understand that contradiction. It's there is no now means there is no absolute idea of now. There is no absolute sense of saying objectively that now is more real than any other moment in time. Okay, every person throughout all history in our past and our future is always going to think it's now. It always looks like it's now to any... The perception of a now is the subjective experience of an observer. An observer in the universe who exists at a particular moment of space and time, it always looks like it's now to him because now is a quality of an observation.
This seems very fatalistic.
Hold on.
And now I see how we're getting into Helpless Truth.
Okay, we're getting Helpless Truth soon. Yeah, exactly.
Makes sense.
What? No, it doesn't. It's crazy.
He's looking for opposition, not agreement.
I can't even oppose it.
What do you mean? Nah, I'll prove it to you first. But I'll prove how I have a proof. There's a proof.
I haven't even seen what you're trying to prove.
Okay, fine. But you hear the two ways of looking at it.
Yeah,
the first thing is to look at the two ways of looking at it.
A little bit.
I just want to make sure I get up.
I couldn't explain it to somebody else.
You couldn't explain it to somebody else. Okay, so then ask a question exactly.
I don't get it.
You don't get it.
It doesn't either.
Well,
the only difference between I see it is I can point at the static and pick a point and tell you how high it is, or vice versa. With the other one, I can't do that.
Right. No, but that's
not...
No, the main thing is like this. The main thing is the difference between an absolute notion of time where versus a relative, subjective notion of time. Where past, present, and future is relative to each person. Each person has a past relative to him and a future relative to him. Okay, so Avraham Avinu has his past and his future. You have your past and your future. Okay, but there's no reason why your future his future is no reason why your division of past and future is any more real than his division. Right? Why should we be biased towards you or towards him? And if you're going to say that his future is not real, well, you're in his future, buddy. You're in his future. Okay? So if you're going to say if future isn't real, future is yet to occur, it doesn't exist, well, you're his future.
Yeah,
so that
didn't exist then.
Oh, see, that idea of I didn't exist then, that's an idea already. You got a clock in your head where reality is up to this moment right now. That's an idea of absolute time, where time is up to here right now. Back then, it was only up to there.
There's no such thing as absolute time.
Well, think about the tapestry point. No, there's no idea. Yes. Well, that's the point of special relativity. That's what we're going to show. Is that you can't... This idea of an absolute time doesn't work out.
There's no such thing as absolute time.
Correct. There's no such thing as absolute time.
That's what you're trying to tell me.
Well, I haven't gotten to that yet.
Okay.
But yes, that's what I'm going to tell you. Okay? So the only legitimate way to really is going to look at it in an objective sense is going to be this idea of the tapestry, where you can look at basically the whole history... Okay, but you're looking at it in one web of space and time together, and you're looking at it all equally, and you're giving each moment in space as time just as much reality as the next. Now there is an ordering; there is a sense to say one comes before the other.
Right, that was your cause point.
Right, there is a cause and effect. There was a way to order them, but there's no way to say that one of them is more real than the other. They're all equally real.
You're telling me. My past exists just as much as right now.
Yes, exactly.
Just as much as what's going to happen in 10 minutes.
Exactly.
What does that even mean?
Well, what does it mean that for it not to be? What would it mean the other way?
That happens and no longer exists, and it's about to happen.
And this is the reverse.
Okay.
This is that they always exist.
See, it depends. It depends what you mean. Relative
what do you
mean
by to exist.
Exactly. Exactly. What do you mean by exist? That's the point. That's exactly the point. What
the point? I don't know what the hell I mean. I exist, I'm here.
Okay, you have to think, what does it mean to say, see, when you've identified a past, okay, you're identifying it relative to this moment, right? When we started this year, right? So you can say, now that's in the past, right?
Yes.
Relative to this moment, Okay? Relative to an hour ago, that was in the future. Correct?
Yes.
So now why are you picking this particular point right now as your the absolute point where the whole universe revolves around?
I hear.
Right? There's no real reason that you have any justification for selecting out your particular moment observation right now as an absolute thing that the universe revolves around. This moment is real. Everything in the future relative to this moment is not real. Everything in the past is no longer exists. What is so special about you right this moment that makes you real and everything relative to you not real?
Almost as if it's all relative.
It's relative, that's the point. Now you have this idea, you have this illusion, you have this belief that there is such a thing as a...
Now.
As a now, exactly, right? But there's no objective idea to your now. Everybody's got their own little now, okay? Some guy in China right now, right? He's on the same clock right now. So he's separated from us in space. Is he real?
Well, only America.
To him, he's real. Oh, we'll get to the guy in China in a second. Okay, well, I shouldn't jump to the guy in China. Okay, fine. But the point is exactly, everybody's got a now. To Avraham Avinu, it was now then. Every person always thinks it's now. It's always now.
And what is it?
What?
And what is it?
Continuum.
What do you mean, what
that's
is
it? That's the
now. It's...
Well, now is the quality of an observation, of a person in the universe, a temporal existence in the universe, which we all are. We all exist in one little part of that tapestry. Okay, that's our little pictures up there. We're a very small little part of it. Now, what does it look like? See, that idea of looking at tapestry is like we're looking at it from outside. We're looking at the universe from outside the universe. We're looking at the entire history of the universe all at once, right? But now, what does it look like and we're one little part of that tapestry, right? Now, what does it look like to be in the universe looking at everything else?
The experience of past, present, and future.
This is what it looks like. For a created existence, temporal existence in the universe, when he observes the other parts, this is what it looks like. It looks like there's a now. Okay? But that now is just the subjective experience of an observation. But that little creature is no more, it's really a ridiculous notion to think that that little creature who's observing things, to think that he's the only thing that's real and everything else that's not simultaneous with him. If you're not simultaneously existing with him, so then you don't exist. Why? There's other creatures who have the same exact observations, and why are you more real than them?
It's now.
Because it's now. It's always now.
Yeah.
It's always now. It always will be now. Every person is always going to think, and if your future is going to look like it's now then, are you going to be less real? They're going to think and say, it's now. The past doesn't exist. Well, you clearly exist here.
You mean because I existed in the past?
So you exist. You have an existence, right? Because of their...
I did exist in the past. I don't exist in the past.
So that idea only makes sense if there's an idea of an absolute time. There's an idea of an absolute time.
I realize that.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
There is.
Okay, fine. Oh, there's an absolute time.
Yes.
Okay, good. So let's see if we can disprove that.
Okay,
fine. So let's see if we can disprove. So in classical physics, well, look, the main part is there's two ways
to
go.
You say classical physics, do you mean Newtonian physics?
Yes.
Okay.
Before relativity.
Not Aristotelian physics.
Well, I think Aristotle, even though Aristotle had a little bit of a different notion of time than Newton, he had an idea of an accident of matter.
Yeah.
But I think he also had an idea of an absolute.
He did?
Yeah, I think so.
That's why you, okay.
Because that's one of the arguments, I think I saw the Rambam has, of why you can have an eternal universe. Why he holds it's not actual infinity is because at each moment the old universe goes out of existence and the new universe comes into existence.
Who held this?
I think Aristotle.
Okay.
So that's why it's not he had an eternal universe, right?
Why he had it?
No, he had his universe was eternal,
right?
Right, in past and future, stretching in all
right.
directions.
Right.
But he didn't believe in infinities, actual infinities.
Okay.
So why doesn't an infinite universe exist? A universe existing in time, infinite time in both directions.
Okay.
Why isn't that an infinite amount
okay.
of universe?
Okay.
Right, so his answer was because at each moment only a finite number of beings exist. At the next moment, those finite beings go out of existence and a new chain of finite beings go into existence.
Uh-huh.
But that only makes sense if there's an idea of absolute time. At
right.
each moment, the old things no longer exist, and in this new moment, you have a whole... It's like the stage. At each moment in time, there's objects on the stage. At the next moment, there's different objects,
mm-hmm.
and the old objects no longer exist.
Okay.
But if you're going to look at them all equally, you have no reason to judge... and to say one is one set of objects is more real than the other. They all equally exist, and really you're left with an infinite number of
objects. So then you have an infinite, and you would have a problem.
Yeah, maybe Aristotle wouldn't hold by it anymore. I don't know. But but basically, it's really that when I say classical physics, I really mean Newtonian.
Right.
I don't really know Aristotle at all. Okay, fine. So what's the disproof? Okay, how do you know that this? And so why is it no longer legitimate, really, to use this idea of splitting up time and space into two separate things, the dynamic view, where as time progresses, that's the reality. Time's absolute idea of time is moving. Okay, so the key idea is basically simultaneity. Okay, so in order for you to maintain your position, Rafi, okay, that there is a now, reality is up to this moment now, right? So you're going to include. I'm gonna exist also, right? I'm real also, and you're now, right? You're right. Radiolas is cool. We're all good, right? Okay, but guy in China, but the guy in China also. China people in China exist now also.
Yes.
Right, but people like the people 5 minutes ago in China, they don't exist, right?
5 minutes ago.
The people, whatever.
In the past.
The past guys, China, they don't exist. But the guys right now in China, they really exist.
Yes.
Okay, good. So what you've done is you set up a moment in time, an absolute objective moment in time that applies to everybody, everything in the universe. And everything in the universe that has this moment, exists in this one moment in time, is real. And whatever isn't real. And this is an objective idea. It's not based upon you. It's an objective, absolute idea. Right?
Right.
Okay, fine. You got to spell these things out.
I'm just waiting for the question.
Okay, fine. The point is like this. This is if you accept these two premises.
What are the two premises?
These two premises. Then you'll see it's wrong. What are the two? These are the two premises of special relativity. Okay? Once you accept these two premises, you're locked in and everything follows. Okay? So I remember when I had this in my physics class, you know? So you hear these premises, you're like, okay, fine, I'll buy that. And then, like, you hear this idea of, like, you know, times, there's no idea of absolute time. You're like, hold on, let me check out these premises again, you know? Well, here are the two premises. Well, the first is called the principle of relativity, which just means that two observers, two people moving relative to each other, okay, will have the same exact laws of physics. They'll be able to. They're each equally legitimate ways of describing the world. Okay, which really means that motion is relative. There's no idea of absolute motion. Okay, so there's two ways of saying it.
Frame of reference.
The idea of a reference.
Give me an example.
Oh, yeah, I'll give you an example. Okay, so let's take a guy on the ground and then a guy in a train. A train's moving 50 miles an hour. Okay, at constant velocity. Okay, acceleration is you're already dealing with a different world. No acceleration. Okay, just a constant velocity train moving 50 miles an hour, and you have a guy on the ground. Okay, who's stationary relative to the train, which is moving 50 miles an hour. Okay, now if you imagine the guy in the train, if you closed up all the windows so he couldn't see outside, okay? So how would he be able to tell if he's moving or not? Right? So when you're in a plane, plane's easier to see, you can't tell that you're moving.
Right.
Any experiment you do is going to come out exactly the same as if you did it on the ground. So long as everything is in this frame of reference that's equally moving. There's no absolute way of determining whether you are absolutely moving or not. Okay, all the laws of physics are perfectly equivalent, right, for these two observers. They both have equal rights to use the laws of physics, and there's no objective way of determining which guy is really moving and which guy isn't. Okay? That's like one way of saying it. I think the little bit easier way of saying it, of getting an idea, is when you really think into the idea of motion, you really realize that the whole idea of motion really is a relative idea. The idea of something absolutely moving doesn't really make any sense. Okay? So let's take this train again. Forget the guy on the ground. Let's take Newton's world of an infinite black, perfectly black space in all directions. Okay? And you got this absolute clock ticking, right? Separate. You got the space and you got this time, totally separate, and you got this train. Okay? What would it mean for the train to be moving?
It was here before, and it's there now.
Well, where? The space is infinite. There's no point in space where you can mark off as being different from any other. So I just got this train against a black background.
Needless.
Yeah, it's moving, it's not moving. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
The whole idea of a thing, if there's only one thing in the world, it's not moving. It wouldn't mean anything for it to be moving. Moving relative to what? It's got to be, you got to have two things and say, this thing is moving relative to some frame of reference, to some other object, to the ground, to the earth, to little lines I'm going to draw on the black space. But if you're going to treat the black space as just this infinite expanse where no point's infinite, there's no point that's differently, right? There's no center of the universe, right? There's a big infinite space. And you just look at this one object, this ball, right? Pick a ball. Is it moving? Is it not moving? What would it mean? It's just a big ball stuck in a black background. Then it's moving. It's not moving. I mean, it has no meaning.
There's no meaning that it's not moving either.
Exactly. The whole notion of motion means it's not a rest. I wouldn't call it a rest. It's just the idea. It just is. Exactly. It just is.
Right.
It ends up being there's no idea of time either. But we'll still start with motion. Okay. It's just right. There's no change. It's just one object. Right. It doesn't make any sense. The whole idea of motion. The very essence of the concept is a relative idea. It's something is moving relative to something else.
Right.
Okay, that's the first postulate. Okay, so first of all, it makes sense why the idea of motion really is a relative idea. Okay, there's no absolute sense of a thing being in motion. And second of all the laws of physics are perfectly equivalent if you're moving. So that's the first thing, that motion is relative. There's no absolute idea of motion. Okay? The second postulate, the second axiom of special relativity, and all you need is these two, is that the speed of light is finite and constant for all observers, no matter what their relative motion is.
So if you just had light and nothing else, it would be consistent at the same speed?
If you just had light, well, light moves relative to light at the same speed also. Even light, right, relative to each other. Always, bright light moves at the same speed, c, a finite speed, constant, c, relative to everything else. Everything that looks at light sees the same speed. If you just had light in the universe, you wouldn't be able to do anything. Time and space wouldn't really exist. Okay, it's a separate problem. But
there would be no speed of light either.
It wouldn't work. There wouldn't be a speed of light if you just had light. Truthfully, but we're not going to get into that. But the point is like this, is that basically that's the second postulate, is that the speed of light is an objective thing relative to every single observer, past, present, future, no matter what his state of motion is. Whenever he measures light using his clocks, right, he sets up his clocks, he sets up his measuring rods, whenever he measures the speed of light, every single observer gets the exact same speed. Okay? Now, we know that there's two reasons. One is it comes out of Maxwell's equations on electromagnetism. It just comes out. It pops out. That this all of a sudden, like a consequence of the laws of electromagnetism, is there's this electromagnetic wave called light, which we know is light, and we know its velocity, it's c. And those laws of physics are not relative to any particular person. They're like the objective laws of electromagnetism. And according to the objective laws, the speed of light is constant, and it doesn't specify relative to who. So that's one way you know it. And then two is because it's such a ridiculous idea, which we'll show you. It's ridiculous because let's think about it like this. Let's say I'm on the ground, okay, and I'm measuring this beam of light, okay? And I say it's moving speed c. So now the guy in the train is moving relative to me. He's chasing after the speed of light. He's moving 50 miles an hour. So when he measures it, you would think he would get
c plus 50.
Okay, fine. C minus 50, but whatever, doesn't matter. 50? If he's chasing 50. After it.
Uh-huh.
As you chase after it, it seems to slow down. Imagine a car on a highway moving 50 miles an hour, okay? If you're on the highway moving 50 miles an hour also, relative to the ground, when you look at that car, it's not moving at all.
Mm-hmm.
As you speed up, that car's motion relative to you slows down.
So you're speeding up. The light should slow down, so to speak.
Yeah, as you speed up, again, your rocket ship and start chasing after the light, the light should start slowing down. Just like when you're chasing after a car on a highway.
It appears slow, even though it's going the same speed. I mean, if I'm chasing a car, it's going 50 miles an hour.
Relative to the ground, but relative to you.
No, if I'm driving the car 50 miles an hour, you're driving the car 50 miles an hour. I'm chasing you. So if we both stay at 50 miles an hour, it's going to be the same distance between us.
Yeah, we're at.
If I start going 60,
yes,
you're still going 50 miles an hour.
Right, it will look to me like you're going 10 miles an hour faster than me. If you're going 60 and I'm going 50... It will look to me like you're going 10 miles an hour faster than me.
Yes.
Right. So let's say you're a beam of light now. Okay? So it'll look to me like you're moving the speed of C. Okay? It's, let's say, 180,000 meters per second or something. Something like that. I forgot what it was. Okay? Miles. right? That's what it looks like. Now, if you step on your gas and you start speeding up to 100 miles an hour, 200 miles, 300 miles an hour, and you look at the light, it's still going to be going the exact same speed. No matter how fast you go, when you look at that light, it's going the same exact speed. Okay? It seems like a crazy idea. Totally bonkers, right?
Walk through one more time.
Yeah, because if I'm in a car, following you, okay? We're both going 50 miles an hour.
Relative to the ground. Okay, it's important to say relative to what? You have to say relative to what?
Because we already established that motion is only a concept relative to a point of reference.
Right. So we're both going
50 miles an hour.
You mean relative
in our world today?
Yeah, yeah.
Relative to the ground. Relative to the highway. Relative to each other. Relative to each other, we're going zero.
Okay. Yeah.
I look out the window, I can shake your hand.
Yes, relative to the...
Relative to the ground, we're both going 50 miles an hour. Relative to each other, we're not moving. Right?
Both just moving at the same speed.
No.
But relative
to
each other.
Around.
Right. But relative to each other, are we moving? Our distance isn't changing.
Relative. Just distance.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. So now, if there's a beam of light moving at a speed, let's call it 1,000 miles an hour.
Wait, finish that example in that case. So now you're in front, and he speeds up.
Yeah, let's say you're in front.
I'm in front of you. Fine. We're both going the same speed.
There's 100 feet in between us. I'm going 50 miles an hour. You're going 50 miles an hour.
Okay.
Relative to the ground.
Relative to the ground. Good.
Okay. We're going to continue being 100 feet away.
Exactly.
Unless you slow down and I speed up.
Exactly.
So let's say I start speeding up. So now I'm going 70 miles an hour. So I'm going to start catching up to you.
Correct.
You're still going 50 miles an hour.
Correct.
Relative to the ground.
Correct.
Relative to the ground.
Correct. But now you're moving 20 miles an hour relative to me.
Good. Yes,
right. I'm moving... Yes.
Right, that's why the distance is decreasing,
okay.
Right?
So, okay.
Right.
Okay, good.
But
that's
the thing
so
is,
crazy.
But if you were trying to chase a beam of light...
Instead of chasing you.
You're going to go 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, it's not going to help anything. It's
going to
keep...
Relative to the light, I'm going...
No, nothing's going to change.
I'm going 80 miles an hour relative...
No.
Don't I have to go relative to something?
You relative to light is always going to be C. No matter how fast you go relative to the ground... That's the crazy thing. Light relative to the ground is, say, 1,000 miles an hour. The light is moving 1,000 miles an hour relative to the ground. You're moving to the ground 100 miles an hour. Right? But you to the light is 1,000. You speed up to 200 miles an hour relative to the ground. You look at that light, it's still moving 1,000 miles an hour.
You're still moving 50 miles an hour.
No.
But it's always the light is always relative to you. Right? So the light relative to you is 1,000 miles per
hour. If I'm driving 70 miles an hour, you're driving 50 miles an hour. In our whole speeding up case.
Yes.
Relative to you.
Right, you're 20 miles an hour.
And you're 50.
No.
Relative, no, to you, I'm 20 miles an hour. All that makes sense is relative to each other, we're moving at 20 miles an hour difference.
I see, okay.
Right? But light relative to everything is always the same speed. No matter how much anything speeds up and tries to chase it, it's always going to be moving away at that exact same speed. You can never come close. You can never beat it. Okay?
Which is wacky, because how can it be going 1,000 miles an hour relative to the ground and relative to you
exactly.
if you're going different speeds relative to the ground?
Exactly.
How can it be constant?
Correct.
That's the problem.
That's the law of it. It's called the law of addition of velocities.
Law of?
Addition of velocities.
Okay.
It's like, look, take this example. If I'm moving 50 miles an hour relative to the ground.
Right.
Okay? And then somebody's moving 20 miles an hour relative to me.
Yeah.
So then I can know that relative to the ground, they're 70 miles an hour. Because I just add it up. I'm
right.
going 50. He's going 20 miles faster than me. So he's going 70 relative to the ground. Okay? This law became invented once it was violated. You know what I mean? You don't name these things. They're so pusha. Right? It's just you add up the thing. Right? Just simple addition.
Yeah.
But it does not work that way with light. Okay? If I'm going 50 miles an hour relative to the ground and the light is going C relative to me, the light is still going, it's not C plus 50 relative to the ground. The light relative to the ground is still going to be C.
It's just so ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Okay?
So it's always X plus C.
I get it. It boggles the mind.
Okay, it boggles the mind. It's crazy. And they tested this out. They couldn't believe it. They spent years testing it, devising it. Every experiment they ever did, they tried moving the Earth. Seems like an impossibility. It's a crazy idea. It seems like it's basically a mass conspiracy. The best they had before Einstein was it was a mass conspiracy of nature.
Of nature.
Basically,
I love it.
It was a mass conspiracy of nature trying to make you think that the speed of light is constant. That was the best they had come up with.
What does that even mean?
A mass conspiracy of nature? Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Nature?
Well, then it's called the Lorentz.
Nature conspired against the people?
That was basically the best they had. Okay? Yes. It was pretty ad hoc.
Yeah,
that's one term for it.
Yeah, it's ad hoc. A conspiracy of nature to make you believe that light is constant.
I can't even write my... It's like a square circle.
It's like a square circle. It's like a crazy idea, right? Okay, fine. But then tell you, this has been... They
it's
tested...
It's a crazy idea. It's impossible.
It's impossible. No, it's not impossible. It's not logically impossible.
But what does that even mean, that nature would conspire against what?
Oh, no. Okay, that. Forget about that. I'm just joking around. Forget that. But that's just the way it looks. That's the way it looks. Every time you measure,
playing a joke on us. Yeah,
right.
Catch you again.
That's what the I don't want to get into the details, but what do I mean by that? Forget about that. The point is that every experiment they have ever done, and they still did it, they didn't accept the relativity for a while. You know, is you measure light, no matter which direction you're moving in, no matter how fast you're going, you're always going to measure it to be the exact same speed. Okay, so it's just a fact.
Relative to everything. Okay.
Exactly. Motion is relative, but light is moving relative to everything at the same constant speed. It's like an absolute idea of relativity. You know, there's a constant of relativity. It's an interesting idea. You know, objective relative idea. Whatever. Okay, fine. Forget that. Okay, good. So now what happens if you accept these two? So you're on board that motion intrinsically is relative and just light moves relative to everything at the same speed. These are the facts, okay? If you accept those facts, now what happens, okay? Yeah, go ahead.
So nothing can be faster than light?
No.
Okay.
Nothing can be faster than light.
So, never mind.
Okay, fine. The Flash. No, he's faster. Okay. Okay.
I was trying to think, is it those airplanes that are faster than the speed of light or faster than the speed of sound?
Sound.
Okay,
sound.
So that would make a lot
super
of sense.
Super
sonic. Yeah.
Sonic boom.
Yeah, and Hadoukens. They're all faster than sound, not light.
Sound,
Sounds nothing. No, it's nothing. It's a joke. Okay, so... Okay, so here's this. So, I mean, beforehand, I mean, it seems like light is infinite. Its speed is infinite, right? If the speed is infinite, then... Okay, forget about it. Speed of light is constant and finite. I'm just saying what would have happened beforehand. Whatever, doesn't matter. Okay.
Or it's infinite?
Forget about that. Okay, it's finite.
The whole thing was it was finite.
Finite, constant, relative to everybody. Okay, good. Okay, now look, this is what happens. Let's say you try to set up like this. What does it mean, Rafi, your theory, okay, that two events are simultaneous? Okay. What would
it
mean?
The guy in China and here, you mean?
Well, let's just take two flashes of light. Okay? We're going to set up a little experiment. Okay? We're going to set up an experiment like this. Well, first, we have to accept the definition. What would it mean simultaneous? Okay?
Exact same time.
What?
It's happening.
Exact same time, correct. Now, this is the point that Einstein says, if you don't get this point, don't go any further in the book. You know, this is a famous one. And then I know you never get it, and you just go further. Okay, but it's the critical point. Okay, so what does it mean for the two?
He obviously wasn't a psychologist.
Exactly. Okay, what does it mean for two events to be simultaneous? Okay, it means that a good definition, okay, would be that if you have two events, and you are, yeah, you have a question.
Does that mean they're going? They're at zero together, right? Relative to each other, they're at zero.
At time equals zero. Let's just deal with an absolute framework, right? Let's imagine there's an absolute time for a second. I mean, it's not going to... Forget, you can't imagine that. But how do we want to test it out, right? How do we want to set up a definition to measure are two things really simultaneous or not?
Okay.
So if I have two events and I am in the middle of them, okay? So each event is 50 feet. One event is 50 feet to my right. One event is 50 feet to my left. Okay, so if they're simultaneous, okay, a beam of light, each event is the flashlight going off, okay? If the flashlights went off simultaneously, so then the light from each event will reach me simultaneously, because I'm in the middle.
Right.
Okay? And if they don't reach me simultaneously, like the one on the right hits me first, and then a half a second later the one on the left hits me, I will say they're not simultaneous, and the one on the right occurred first.
Right.
Because the speed of light is constant for all observers, I can use that to define simultaneous. Right? Okay, good.
I'm with you.
You're with me so far? Okay, good.
We're walking into a trap.
So now you have to...
I can sense it.
Okay, good. So now you got to look at these two observers, okay? We have a guy on the train and the guy on the ground. Okay? The train is 100 feet long, as measured by the guy in the train. I'm not going to do space contraction, okay? But 100 feet long, okay? There's a guy in the middle of the train.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll call him Rafi. Okay? As this train is moving along, we'll make this board the beginning and end of the train. Okay? This eraser over here will be the observer in the middle.
And he's on the train?
He's on the train. Okay? And here's one flashlight and the other flashlight. Okay? At the two edges of the train.
And they're also on the train.
They're also, let's keep them off the train, okay? But we'll do it this way, okay? They're off the train, but they're 100 feet apart as measured on the ground, okay? They're 100 feet apart, right? When the front of the train, relative to a guy, I forget where you're at, a guy on the ground now, he sees the train going by. When the front of the train hits this flashlight, right, the flashlight goes off. And when the back of the train hits this flashlight, exactly, the flashlight goes off.
Wait, so won't that have to happen at the exact same time? Because they're 100 apart and the train is 100 feet long?
Right, very good. So if you're on the ground, they're 100 feet apart, you think the train is 100 feet long, okay? So you're going to say, and you're the guy on the ground standing in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. You're the guy on the ground in the middle, and you're going to say, as the front of the train hits it, the back of the train is going to hit the other flashlight, the light's going to go off, and that light is going to hit you in the middle. Correct?
Yes.
And you'll say those two events were simultaneous. Those two flashlights, the blue flashlight and the red flashlight, the event of them both being triggered occurred simultaneously. These two events, these bursts of light. And I know that because I'm in the middle, and I got the beam of light at the same exact time, in the middle.
Good.
What is it going to look like to the guy on the train, the observer in the train? Okay? So think about it. Okay? When the front of the train hits it, this light starts traveling. Okay? But it takes time. It's finite. It's not infinite, right? It's finite. It takes a certain amount of time. So in the interim, the guy in the train moves closer to it.
Oh, no.
This guy takes longer to get there.
Right. So he's going to see this one first. And this one, and the red one, is going to see second. They're not going to hit him simultaneously. He's going to see one event before the other.
How is he? What do you mean when you say he's moving forward?
Because the train's moving.
The train's moving. The train is moving.
He's moving towards the beam of light. As the beam of
he's
light
moving towards forward. One, so and he's moving away from the other. So he's going to see. He's not going to see them simultaneously. He's going to say that the blue flashlight went off first.
Right.
Okay. And he's going to say, "Look, I'm equidistant between them." From when the flashlights went off, I'm 50 feet from this one, 50 feet from this one, because the back of the train's over there, 50 feet away, that's what triggered it. The front of the train is here, 50 feet away, that's what triggered it. Right? And we're going to leave out space again. And he's going to say that look, these events did not...
He's saying by the time, because it hit, even though it may have hit the blue and the red at the same time...
Relative to the guy on the ground.
Relative
to everybody.
To the guy in the middle.
No.
No, it hits it. Yes, it did.
The guy on the ground that says, yeah, they were simultaneous. They went off at the same time.
The flashes. You're telling me the guy on the train is going to say he hit the flashlight.
First the blue one went off, then the red one went off. Now the guy on the ground says to him, you moron, you're moving. That's why you think they weren't simultaneous. Really, they were simultaneous, and you're just moving closer towards it. But the guy in the train says, no, buddy. I'm at rest. You're the one moving. I look out my window and I see you flying by 50 miles an hour. You're the one who's moving. And neither one has a right to say that either one objectively is moving. They're moving relative to each other. They each have an equal claim on determining, using the laws of physics, determining whether events occur at the same time or not. There's no, you cannot give priority to one or the other. That's the principle of relativity. They each have an equal justifiable claim.
But isn't there an internal contradiction for the train guy? Because according to him, he has to admit that the train is 100 feet long.
Right.
And if the rules of the experiment are that the flashlight will go off when it's at the end of the trains.
Right.
So then by definition, they are being triggered at the same time.
Right.
Even from his perspective.
Okay, that's where you have to get into space contraction, where the rulers. He's going to say that first the train hit that one, Right.
By definition, it must be the other end also.
Right. He's going to say they're not really, those two flashlights are not set up 100 feet away. He's going to say when he measures the distance between the two flashlights, he's going to say they're about 110 feet away.
Why?
But he'd be wrong.
Well,
but he'd be
he's
going to
say they're 110 feet away first. No, he's going to say they're 90 feet away. He's either 90 feet away.
And he'd be wrong.
He'd be wrong. Well, no. When he takes out his ruler and he measures it, he'll get 90 feet. That's what I did. I don't want to get into the space thing. The way it ends up working out is because the guy on the train is not only do you think his clocks are messed up, but his rulers shrink. That's space contraction. His rulers shrink. Space shrinks.
Okay.
In order, and so that's the, I don't want to get to that point. But the main point here is if you accept these two principles, you'll see that when he judges these events, I'm just explaining how you get the contradiction. Okay, that's what works out. It takes a while to really juggle the thing, how each one views it and ends up working out. Each guy says the other guy's rulers are too small. Okay, fine. Don't worry about that. The point is, this guy is going to say that these events were not simultaneous. They did not happen at the same time. While the guy on the ground is going to say they happened at exactly the same time. Okay? But the point is that there is no objective sense in saying in an absolute way that the two events are simultaneous. Relative to one observer who's on the ground, they were simultaneous. Relative to every other observer who's moving relative to him. Okay, it's not just this one guy on the train. Everybody else who is moving in a state of motion, constant motion relative to him, they were not simultaneous. Okay? So these two events, a blue flashlight and a red flashlight going off, there is no absolute way of saying whether they went off at the same time or they didn't. All you can say is relative to one guy they did, relative to another guy they didn't.
So now we don't have simultaneity?
Right, because let's just say now you want to say that whatever exists now is really real. Okay? Well, let's just say when these two things go off, right? So are they both real right now? Well, relative to one guy, they're real. Relative to another guy, only one of them is real and the other one isn't real. It's in the future. It's an event that's going to happen in the future. That doesn't make any sense. If time is an absolute idea, that whatever the clock of nature is really up to, that's what really exists, how could it be that one guy is going to say the blue and the white and the red flashlight are both being triggered right now? They really exist, those two events. And the other going to say only one of them is real and the other one doesn't exist yet. That's impossible.
I hear that.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the guy on a train, why it doesn't hit simultaneously for him.
Well,
I just don't get that. Because
well,
if I...
How does it look... How
these are the two flashlights.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's a train. Like, as soon as it hits this, it's that. We'll hit that.
Well, what's it going to look like to the guy on the ground?
Because the light has to move from the flashlight to the guy. But he's moving towards...
So it's not the flashlight's going off. Because the light then has to travel.
Yeah.
Right,
it has
to travel.
I thought by the hitting, because I'm like, they're going to hit at the same time.
No, they're not. I mean, it depends upon the guy. The train is going to say they didn't hit at the same time.
But that's what I'm saying. The guy on the train would hit at the same time.
No, he's going to say they didn't.
I'm saying the light traveling quicker, because he's still moving.
The guy's
the light has to go short.
The guy
on
the train is going to say that my train's 100 feet... But those two things are really 90 feet apart. They're not 100 feet apart. And therefore, the front of the train hit the red flashlight before the back of the train...
He's deducing that from the fact that the light hit him at different...
No, he's deducing that when he actually takes out his rod, measuring his measuring stick and measures. He's going to say it's 90 feet.
So I understand...
But
the
guy on the ground measures...
You have to back that up to us. You're going to have to get it.
Well, you're going to have to go into it.
I understand...
That's how you work out the contradiction.
Is it enough for me to... Because I understand why the light on the blue would hit... For the red.
Yeah.
Is that enough for me to know? I know.
Yes.
I realize that.
And for the guy on the train.
Yes.
He'll first see
that
the,
I understand.
He'll first see
that
the blue light.
Sense.
He'll see the blue light before he sees the red light.
That I understand.
Exactly.
I don't really buy the rule that it's...
Oh, but if the guy on the ground is saying that the blue light and the red light went off simultaneously, right? And the guy on the train is saying they didn't go off simultaneously.
Well, did they both have an objective right?
And they both have a right to say it, so you can't say that there's an absolute sense of simultaneity, of a particular now where things are real and wherever is not occurring now doesn't exist. Because each guy is going to say, they're going to have a different... Every person, basically every person who's moving relative to anybody else, they're all going to have a different definition of what exists right now. Every observer is going to have a different now.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore you see the idea of now, which is a present, what exists presently right now is a subjective phenomenon. Okay? That's what basically in special relativity, you have to really, you can still do this dynamic thing. You can still say there's a past, present, future. But it's just subjective. It's not objective. It's not real. It's not real in an absolute sense. Okay? You can still look at the world that way if you
right.
want, but it's just relative to you. But if you want to look at the world in an objective way, you're going to have to treat every single moment, every single point, every single event in space and time as equally real.
Does that mean you could practically rewind and fast forward?
No,
it's space travel.
No, this doesn't mean it's
space travel.
No, it makes, because look at the tapestry again. Look at the tapestry.
I know, but I could decide to look, if I'm standing outside of the tapestry.
Right.
I could decide to look that end or that end.
Well, what do you think when you do when you look at a star? Okay? When you look at a star, you look up in the sky, you look at a star. What you're really looking at is some part much earlier on the tapestry. You're just seeing that light come to you.
Right.
What you're really doing when you're looking at the sky is you're looking back in time. You're seeing the past. Right? Do you think the star really exists right now? No. I mean, right now it doesn't exist anymore, right? It's been a few billion years since that light went away. In this absence, right? But you're looking back in past. As you look further in distance, in the universe, you look further in distance, what you're really seeing is the past in time. You're actually looking backwards on the tapestry. Okay, a little bit of a different point. Not really, but...
Yeah.
But okay.
You
got it. Comprende. Okay, fine. Now, okay, fine. So now, just to transition. Okay, to
what
time is it? We still got time. 9:10.
Oh, good.
It's a long share, boys. Okay, the transition to the Hilchos Tshuva part. Okay. Okay, fine. So first is. Well, first I want to read Koheles. Okay. So now I'm not necessarily saying.
Relativity, Koheles, and
okay.
Tshuva.
I'm not necessarily saying that Koheles, this is necessarily Koheles had this idea, but the point is there are two ways of looking at it. And I think once you say there's two ways of looking at it, you can realize that there's no real reason to favor one over the other, the dynamic way of looking at it. Okay? So here's the pasuk. It's one of the most cryptic pasukim. And, you know, you don't have to agree with me on the interpretation.
But so you're going to claim now that both models, he just didn't necessarily know one was right, or you're saying he didn't even know which one was right?
He knew that it was an illusion, I think. Whatever, you don't have to.
But you're certainly going to claim he had both models.
He's Koheles, Shlomo Malf, he's a smart guy.
Are you claiming he had both models?
I don't know. I'm just saying, well, you can hear the pasuk and you can determine for yourself. I don't really know. It's more of a cute thing, less of a, I'm not really proving anything from here. It's more just like an interesting thing. Okay, here's the pasuk. You tell me what you think it means. Okay?
Where is it?
The pasuk is Gimel Tesvav and Koheles. Okay. The pasukim before and after don't really help. I don't think. Okay, but you can look at it your own time if you want. If you think maybe it'll help. Okay, here's the pasuk. Ma shehaya kvarhu. That which was kvarhu. Already is.
Already is. Okay.
Kvarhu. Vasher liyos. And that which will be, kvar haya, already was. Okay, you hear the pasuk?
What?
Here's the pasuk. Ma shehaya kvar hu, that which was, already is. Vasher liyos kvar haya, and that which will be, already was. V'ha'elokim yivakish es nirdaf.
Nirdaf
is
one being pursued.
Yeah, pursued. The pursuit. Okay. Yavaki seeks the pursuit. Right? Or seeks pursuit.
What does that do?
Seeks pursuit. Oh, okay, fine. So Rashi learns is talking about a guy wrote David and Nirdaf and guy kills him and God's gonna punish him. We'll give him. We're not gonna go with Rashi. It's not gonna work out. I'm gonna go with how Ibn Ezra learns this second half of the pasuk. But I have no clue what Ibn Ezra's saying. So it could be saying what I'm saying, could be saying something totally different. I have no clue. And I think it's impossible to figure it out, okay? But I'm just going to use him for how he's learning Nirdaf, okay? Okay. Exactly. Okay, fine. The Nirdaf, okay, hu ha-omid. It is the omid. It's what stands, the present. Shekina oso b'milas hu, where he's nicknamed it, with the word of hu. Kvar hu means it is the present, the omid. V'hu ben avar v'asid. Okay, and it is in between the past and the future. Okay, who? The present. Omid, it's standing, right? It's the Omid. V'inyin she'elokim bikesh min hazman she'yeh nirdav zman rodif achar zman. So God wanted it. He made it in a way from time, because the inyin of the pasuk, like Ibn Ezra, the inyin of this pasuk is time, right? Mash ha'yikvar hu, that which was is, that which will be already was. right? And Lakim Yavakesh says, there, Davis, God wanted it that there should be this illusion of where one moment in time chases the next moment, right? You're always chasing the now. You can never catch it, right? It's always gone. It's a fleeting moment in time. It's always gone. Okay, fine.
A better way of saying it have been the past is and the future is, not in the past and the future already was?
Well, it means to say that the future is just as real as the... is just like you think the past was determined, the past occurred, Avraham Avinu, the future also, same way, already was. Future already was, right? Just like the past is determined, the past occurred...
Okay, no, I understand that, but wouldn't a clear way of saying it be, just like you're saying that the past is, so too the future is?
I don't know. But basically, okay, fine. So I'm saying is that if you analyze it in terms of physics, right? I'm not saying cause and effect, but if you look at it one way, you look at it, there's no real sense to saying that the past is less real than the present or the future is less real than the past. They're all equally of equal claim on reality, okay? But God made it in a way where the creatures in the universe have this illusion, have this sense of where there's this flow of time, where one moment of time follows the next, okay? But it's an illusion. It's Hevel. Okay, it's just Hevel Avalim Amo Koheles. I call Hevel. Okay, it's just another illusion. And I think the best way I can remember is that this illusion expressed in a psychological sense is from Homer. Okay, so you're all familiar with
Simpson or the Greek?
Homer Simpson. No. the Greek poet. So he has Achilles' shade. Okay, Achilles' shade. I did Wikipedia this. I didn't really know it. Okay, fine. So what does he say? He has Achilles' shade. I think come to Ulysses or Odysseus, I forgot who it was, okay? So he says like this, he says it's better, this is after Achilles is dead, okay? So he says, it's better to be a living slave of a poor man than to be king of all the dead, okay? It's expressing a certain psychology, okay? A certain sense of better, I think there's a possibility of better to be a living dog than to be, right? Another passage somewhere. Okay, it's Dave is telling me, but is that this idea of like any kind of lowest level existence in this? As long as you're alive and you exist right now, at least you're real. At least you exist now, as opposed to somebody who's dead, who is the king of all the dead. Great, but you're dead. It doesn't mean anything. You have no real existence. Okay, so like being alive in this particular moment, that's like the greatest thing because you're real. Okay, that's the psychological illusion that a person projects, that this is our moment under the sun. We got our moment, let's take advantage of it. We're real now, nobody else is real. The future's not real, the past is not real. We're real, we exist, okay? And it's a certain psychological way. It's an illusion that your mind creates. It's a very helpful illusion for actually getting around the world and dealing with life. It's a persistent illusion and it's pretty useful. But nevertheless, when you look at it from laws of physics, special relativity, and even I think if you analyzed it even previously, there's really no justification for it. And there's no real sense to saying that you're more real now because you exist now than somebody else. Okay? Okay, fine. Now let's take Shofar, second part of the Shir, Shofar. Okay? So it's Perek Gimel Halacha Dalet.
No.
Okay. So the Rambam is like this. Perek Gimel Halacha Dalet. Okay, so that's Hilchos Shuvos. So if you didn't, I mean, you guys all basically have the general idea. Okay, fine. But in any event, this thing stands on its own, but okay, fine. So the Rambam says like this. Is Afal Pi Shetikia Shofar Barosh Hashanah Gzeres HaKasav. Right? It's a halacha, it's a mitzvah, we have to do it. Remez Yeshbo. Okay? There's a remez. Ram only says remez a couple times in Mishnah Torah. This is one of them. Okay? There's a remez in Tekiya Shofar. Okay? It's an allusion, alludes to an idea. Okay? Philosophical concept. Kilomar. Uru Yeshenim Yeshenaschem. Wake up, sleepyheads, from your sleep. Okay, sleepyheads, whatever. Vekitsu Nirdamim Mitar Demaschem. And awaken. I don't know those two words. Ooh, wake up, awaken, whatever, get up. Those who are in a deep slumber, they're even in a deeper slumber. There's two types of, there's two levels of people who are napping, they're sleeping, and there are guys who are in a real deep slumber. Wake up. V'chivshuv maseichem, search out your actions, your deeds. V'chazvi b'tshuva, and return in tshuva, do tshuva, repent. V'zichru borachem, and remember your Creator. Eilu ashochem es ha'emes b'havle azman. These are those who forget the reality, who forget what's true, in the illusion of the time. Okay, the illusion
That's
of the time.
Not what he means.
Okay, don't worry about it.
Oh, come on.
Hold on.
Oh, come on.
Hold on. V'shogin kol shenasam behevel v'rik. And they are obsessed. Shogin, it's like you're obsessed. You're constantly overcome, preoccupied. An entire year with illusion, fantasy, v'rik, and emptiness. Right, rik, rik. It's emptiness. Asher lo yoel, which has no benefit. V'lo yatzil, doesn't save, doesn't help. Doesn't benefit, doesn't help you at all. He beat the national sechem, look at your souls. Ve'tivu darchechem malechem, make good your ways and your actions. Ve'yazov kol echad mikem darko hara, machshavosa asher lo tova. And abandon your evil ways and your thoughts and your character, machshavosa, your thoughts, your way of thinking, which is not good. Okay? The illusion of time. Okay, fine. So basically, the main chilek I want to get to, okay, in this second part, is the distinction between chaye shah and chaye olam. Okay? So this is an idea that Chazal used a lot of time, and I think this is the idea that the Rambam is referring to. Okay? Now, I think for sure, I don't think the Rambam was referring to special relativity. I'm not really saying that. But I do believe that the idea of special relativity can help you appreciate this point of why it's such an illusion. Okay, what does it mean? Is that a lot of people spend their entire existence, their entire life, obsessed with things that have only significance in the now, in this moment right now. Okay, it's of things like when they get into little interpersonal fights with people, if they engage in gossip, lashon hara, the whole Hollywood is always obsessed with what's going on right now, on people who are constantly checking their friends' status on Facebook, okay, or Twitter, okay, what is going on right now at this particular moment? And there's a tremendous amount of information that a person can get, especially with the internet, about what is going on in the world right this moment, right now. Okay.
And it is more interesting than knowing what was going on yesterday.
Yeah, because nobody cares about the now of like 2 years ago, okay? Because just like nobody cares about people's fights of 200 years ago, and if you ever read, nobody's going to care about people's fights right now. It's not really important. Its entire significance is in this little moment of time, okay? Now, this little moment in time is not any more real than any other stupid little moment in time. Okay, but people spend their entire days, their entire years, obsessed with things that only have value and significance in this particular moment in time.
They just go from one to the next.
Exactly. In each moment, it's always now. It's always now. And in each now, they're always obsessed with what's important relative to that little now. But what's important relative to that little now has no objective value. That now has no real objective sense of being more real than anything else. So you're totally involved in a chaye shah, in a life of the moment, in something that has only a transient significance to this particular moment. Okay, the taivas almost all come under this category, right? What does it help you if you eat a steak a month ago? Right, it tasted very good then in that now, but it has no real bearing on this now. Okay, so that's what the point of the remez of the shofar is, to awaken a person to this illusion of, like, you live your whole life, your whole year, you're in a slumber where you've just become, you have this illusion of the now, where there's some incredible significance to my existence right now, and everything that's coming, all the information coming to me around the world right this second happens to be very important. Why? Because I exist right now, and this is information I have access to. But, like, would you care, people who read, let's say, I think Hollywood's a very good example, but, like, people read these, like, magazines, these People magazines or whatever it is. Like, how interesting do you think it is to read magazines from, like, 6 years ago? Nobody wants to read that. Or 10 years ago. No, well, you, because it's not going on right now. You want to hear the current gossip right now. But who cares? It's no more value than the current gossip back then. That was a year ago. It's this exact same reality. There's no difference. Okay? But this is in contrast.
What do you think he means, according to your explanation, when he says, Asher lo yo'el v'lo yatzil?
It means like, certainly yo'el means like this. Is the wonderful steak you had a month ago, it doesn't help you, is not going to help you. Okay, I'll explain what it means, okay, in a second.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Okay, now this is in contrast to Chai Yishah. Okay, what's the word? Chai Olam. Chai Yishah is in contrast to Chai Olam. What would it mean, Chai Olam? Okay, so even though it's true, okay, we're all little temporal existences in this great tapestry of reality, and we just got one little spot, okay, our little piece of space and time where we exist in, okay, and we have all our little observations on this particular moment. We can, from our observations in the present, on our present, we can glean things. We can glean things that are universal, okay? Things that have a more eternal a value and significance outside of this particular moment in space and time, okay? One example, a simple example, is from observations in this particular moment, you can learn the laws of physics, right? Now, the laws of physics are always true, right? They've always been the case. They always will be the case, let's assume, right? And from your particular moments, if you study something like that, you can be studying from, instead of wasting your time with a particular observation of a particular beam of light you saw, you can universalize and you can pull out from the Chai Yishah, you can tap into the Chai Yishah as a way of connecting to Chai Olam, okay? Somebody who learns Torah, okay? When you're studying the halacha, you're studying the sissi, you're studying this Rambam, okay? This is a Rambam that's going to be learned in the future. If you learned, it was learned in the past. It's this idea, the study of the halacha, it's something that spans time. It's our Masorah. It's something that doesn't just have significance in a particular moment, but it's something that you're tapping into the Chachmas HaTorah. You're tapping into something from your Chai Yishah, from your temporal existence. You have the ability to tap into ideas and things that have a more permanent value and significance. Okay, when you do that, when you spend your life, you spend your year involved in things that have significance on a Chaya Olam level, let's say Chachmas HaTorah, right? When you involve yourself in Torah, so that has a benefit. Okay, it's Yoel. What does it mean, it's Yoel? Because your later, your future nows, your future existence, when you're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, you will benefit if you involve yourself in Torah right now. While if you involve yourself in chasing taivas, eating steak, chasing women, or watching TV or reading magazines, okay, no, that's not going to have any impact on your existence 20 years from now. But if you learn Torah and you develop a skill and an ability to learn Torah, so in 20 years from now, 30 years, when you're 50, 60, when you're retiring, right, you're not going to be able to enjoy all the taivas the same way, but you will be able to enjoy Torah, you will be able to engage in the life of Chaya Olam, and you'll develop the skills and the abilities, and it will benefit you. Okay, if you involve yourself in these ideas and developing these skills that can last for a lifetime and it can enable you to tap into things that have significance and value more than just your temporal existence, then you can benefit yourself. And also just on a psychological level, part of the reason why you have this Achilles shade idea of that we're real and why there's a psychological draw to the illusion that we're real is because man wants to feel like there's something special about him, that he's tapping into some real reality. He's more real, he's very real, okay? But he doesn't want to think that he's just a particular moment in space and time, and he's no more real than anything else, and he's nothing special to this particular. You don't want to realize that there's nothing really modern about this world. This is not where reality is up to right now. You don't want to realize that. You want to think that you're special. But you can, in a sense, satisfy your psychological need for eternity, for partaking in something that's greater than a particular temporal existence, through being involved in the Chachmas HaTorah. Because you can appreciate that these things are not true. They're not. It's not a knowledge of particulars, particular events, but rather it's a knowledge of something that's greater, that spans particular events. It's a universal concepts. Okay. Okay, the second point about the difference between Chayesha and Chay Olam is, is basically midos. Okay, is people who have, if you have bad midos, okay, your character traits are flawed. So you will constantly be engaged in petty fighting, between interpersonal petty fighting, which is only going to be relevant in the now, in this particular moment. It's the Hollywood example. All these stupid magazines, if everybody's saying gossip and Lashon Hara about everybody else, it's totally unimportant in 5 years later, 10 years later. If you ever read like a biography about Newton, you know, Isaac Newton and Leibniz, the discoverers of calculus, and like they just had like these very petty fights about who discovered this first and like this, and like it's something like weird about it. Like you're struck by like they're like engaged in discovering calculus, you know, and like and just like this stupid pettiness of what it's so shallow when you look back into the past, you know, but like every person in your particular now, you get caught up in this reality, and you put like this tremendous value on it, and you get caught up in a chayisha world. But if you work on your midos, and you can, you know, like the Torah's idea of ethics, of mahu avata on the derech of Avram Avinu, hilchos deos, if you work on these things, so then that benefit of being chozer b'tshuva in terms of midos, that is something that also, it will be yoel, it will help you, it will have a beneficial effect on the rest of your life. The rest of your life will be much more enjoyable. Okay, if instead of engaging in petty fighting and Lashon Hara, you engage in tshuva and try to fix your character traits and stop being so petty, stop being so worried about other people are doing right at this moment, of checking their Facebook, checking Twitter, whatever it is, and being obsessed with that, or even the news can become that for somebody. It doesn't have to be, but the news, economic news, okay, it could just be like, who cares? It's just this particular economic crisis at this particular moment. You know, the Great Depression is just as real as our little depression, okay? It's no, there's no special relativity. This is not any more real than anything else. There is idea of practically if it might be relevant, but just stop to be caught up on what's going on in the world right now. Politics, these things, people become obsessed with it. And that's all they spend their life doing, just watching what's going on right now somewhere in the world, okay? But if you don't do that, if you can pull yourself out of like these things that have no real benefit, the hevel and v'reik, it's just total emptiness, right? No substance there. And you could work on yourself and you'd be chozer b'tshuva. So those perfections that you can gain in character traits and midos, you'll carry with you for the rest of your life, and it will benefit your later nows. Your later nows will be a happier person who won't have the same, you know, the same aggravation. You'll have better social relationships with friends. You'll have better friendships. You'll have a much better existence. It will benefit you permanently, because you're making permanent changes to yourself. Okay, you're not living your life engaged in a chaye shah, but you're trying to live your life with chaye olam, trying to pattern your character traits after what the Torah, how the Nevi'im describe God's character traits. You try to pattern your life after things that are eternal. Okay, zichru barachem, think it, recognize your Creator, the name of God. The idea of God is what the Rambam says is what's that's the only thing that really stands forever, the idea of God. So when a person works on his knowledge of God, knowing how God exists, what does that mean? How does God act? When he studies his Creator, right? A little creation in space-time is able to somehow pull out from your observations of reading a Rambam, which the act of reading a Rambam is an act of a particular act in space and time, a momentary act. You're able to think about ideas of God which are really eternal. And the ideas themselves are not particular, but you can go from Chaye Shach to Chaye Olam. Okay? Okay, the last example is in terms of mitzvos, okay? In terms of a person's instincts. So, I mean, a person who, I'm going to give an example of like an addiction, but addiction, I use the term, and it's a much more general sense than like, you know, there's such a thing as like a drug addiction, but then there's an idea of a person that is addicted to any particular type, which means even when you know it's good for you to stop, you can't really stop. Okay, to different degrees, different quantities, okay? But if you have that particular addiction of any particular taiva, well, you just continuously have to go to it, okay? So you're always going to be living a life of chayesha. Every satisfaction is just going to be temporary, and it's going to be followed eventually by another desire, which is going to have a temporary satisfaction. And it'll be an endless cycle of desires and satisfactions that never really... Each satisfaction is only temporary, and each desire is only temporary, and your whole life becomes this endless chain of meaningless existence. But if you can work on it through mitzvos really are what these mitzvos accomplish, where they You learn how to control yourself. You learn how to control your taivas, and you learn how to not be a slave to your desires, and you could have a, live a life of mitzvos and ma'asim tovim. So you can really pull yourself out of the hevle hazman, the illusion of time, a life totally obsessed with what is going on right now, the meaningless present, and try to use the present that you do exist in, because everybody has a subjective present, use that to as a springboard to chai olam, to things that are more permanent, more eternal than your particular present right now, which doesn't really mean anything. It just happens to be the world that you are in. Okay? Okay, fine. Let me look to the next part of the Rambam, which without this idea, it doesn't really make any sense. Oh, hopefully this works. Okay, fine. So the next, the Rambam moves on.
Okay,
the Rambam moves on like this. He says, Lefikach, Tzarech kol adam, shiir atzmo kol ashana kulo, ki lo chetzi azakai v'chetzi chayef.
Which is, just to point out the context, this is a continuation of what we started at the beginning of the parak. It's the beginning of the Afal Pi Shetkiyah Shofar, which is an interruption.
I know. But this Lefikach is following...
Yeah, Lefikach is following, yes, agree.
It's following the remnants of Shofar.
Absolutely.
Okay. It says, therefore, a person should look at himself the entire year like he's half chayev, half zakai. V'chein kol olam chetzi azakai v'chetzi chayef. The whole world is half chayev, half zakai, right? Merit and dimer. Chet chot chet echad, hare hechri atzma v'chriyas kol olam kul lo chavchov v'garm lo ashchasa. One sin, you cause you and the entire world to be destroyed. Right, because based upon the prior Rambams, that it goes by the scales, right? You're tilting the scales. Also, mitzvah achas or yechri atma v'chri ko'om kul kav schus v'garm lahem shua v'atzala. Right, one mitzvah can save the entire world, save yourself, total salvation. Right, zehu shnemar tzadik yisod olam. Zeh tzadik atma v'chri es kolom v'hitzilo. Okay, he saved the entire world by one of his actions. It sounds like a very dramatic Rambam, right? But what the heck is the Rambam talking about? Lefikach, how does this follow from there's a remez in Tekiah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah that wake up from your whole slumber, right? Okay, fine. What does it mean, Lefikach, you should see yourself the whole year in this way? So I think the point is like this, is that on the one hand, you're calling it Hevle Hazman, okay? The Rambam is saying that there's this illusion of time where people get caught up in the present and they attribute an objective, absolute significance, tremendous importance. Okay, you don't have to say special relativity. Special relativity, I think, is what makes you see that it's such an illusion. It's such a ridiculous illusion that it just doesn't even have. Even physically, it's wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's not even just psychologically, philosophically wrong. It's even in physics, it's just not true. Okay, but now let's just deal in the philosophical, psychological realm, where a person gets caught up in the significance of his particular moment. Okay. So there's a certain way you could say it's like, okay, fine. So that everything is just momentary and every particular moment has no real value, okay? But the point is, no, it's you're shattering that illusion, okay? That's every, like Einstein says, the past, present, and future, and this whole distinction that this is really right now, it's just an illusion, it's persistent, but it's just an illusion. You shatter that illusion. Now, what are you left with? Shofar is, it breaks through, it pierces your illusion. It's the Borei Olam coming through and saying, "What's where Shofar come from? Comes from Sinai, right? Sinai and Lost Love, Most Mashiach, where God comes to man, and he shatters his illusions, and it's a blast, spontaneous blast, and he shows you you've been looking at the world totally wrong, and recognize your Creator. Okay, but what is it? What is it? What are you left with after you lose this illusion of past, present, and future? What are you left with? Okay, you're left with an idea of that each moment in time has incredible value. Why? It's incredible value insofar as it's a vehicle of tapping into something eternal. If you spend your year involved in Chachma, involved in Tshuva, involved in Ma'asim Tovim and in Torah, so then every single moment can be an incredibly valuable experience because you can tap into that which is eternal. What is a waste of time if you spend every moment engaged in what's only relevant to that particular moment? Then you've wasted your entire existence and you're sleeping through your life and your whole life is totally wasted. You'll be a depressed person who has no... When you get old, you're not going to be able to enjoy your taivas anymore. You're not going to have anything to do. You're going to be... Nobody's going to like you. You're going to be fighting with all your friends who are fighting with each other also. And you're going to be reading the stupid new Hollywood magazines or what's going on in that generation. You're going to be a depressed old man. Okay, but if you don't spend your life, spend every now involved in what's significant for the now, but you use the few nows that you are given to tap into that which is eternal, the Chayei Olam, you spend your life for Chayei Olam, So then each moment has incredible significance. And that's why lefikach, look at, you should look at every single moment of your life, of shofar, as it is incredible significance, as the whole world hinges upon it. As there's an eternal thing, that the temporal ties into the eternal. There's a way to go from the temporary observation of reading a Rambam, reading a Chumash, reading a, going to a Shir, hearing an idea, which is just a temporary part of your existence, and you're tapping into things that have eternal value. Okay, and that's what the Rambam is showing you, how like, lefikach, how, what are you left with? You're left with the idea of each moment has so much more value than you initially thought it did. Okay, and the whole world can hinge upon your every particular action. Okay, it's replacing it with what seems to be what the, it seems to be the same thing. We just reject the idea that each moment is objective value, but you're replacing it with, no, it really does. Every moment does really have incredible value, but only insofar as it's a vehicle of Chayei Olam. Okay? Okay, fine. Now for the final part of this year. The final part of this year is about Olam Haba. Okay?
Before you get to that,
okay,
just if you continue in the flow of the Rambam, he then says, Mipnei Inyan Zeh.
I'm not going to go further. Mipnei Inyan Zeh, he's referring to, I think, the entire shofar also.
Right. I think
because Rosh Hashanah is set up. Rosh Hashanah, yeah, to Yom Kippur, right, is set up as this time where you're supposed to try to think about this. The Seir Simei Tshuva is dedicated because of the Remez Shofar. That God said, there's three shofars, really, okay? One shofar is the shofar at Sinai. The other shofar is the Ketz HaYamim, Yimos Mashiach. And the third shofar is the shofar that we blow on Rosh Hashanah every year.
Okay.
Okay, so that mitzvah shofar, God gave us this mitzvah of shofar, right? And if you look at the Pesukim and shofars, right? Sometimes it's our shofar, Zichron Shrua, right? So we blow a shofar. So our shofar is that God gave us a mitzvah at Sinai. He gave us a mitzvah to remember the shofar of Sinai. That there's a reality of something greater than a particular moment where the eternal creator comes to man and he spontaneously, he's Megali, he reveals himself to man. Okay? So that shofar is a mitzvah once a year on Rosh Hashanah, and it sets up a period of time from Aser Simei Tshuva where you should especially use this mitzvah to focus on this idea of the Hevelei Zman, the illusion of spending your life involved in things that have only significance in the moment, and using this mitzvah to break away from that, such that you're left with a, when you get rid of the illusion, you're left with a life where the entire year, you're living the entire year where each moment has an eternal value.
Okay,
okay, that's the Aser Simei Tshuva. Okay, that's the point, is that the Lefikach is saying the whole year should be different. Shofar should make your whole year different. But, because we exist in space and time, you gotta take a certain part of the year where you dedicate towards breaking down this illusion. Okay, fine. Now I'm going to go to the last part about Olam Haba. So it's in Perek Tes.
Tes?
Yeah.
Tes?
Well?
Olam Haba Tes?
Oh yeah, I'm skipping that. Okay, I want to basically say like this. Is I don't want to go into the Rambam's particular version of Olam Haba because the Ramban is a different version. And I don't think... And I don't
be a fan of the Ramban on this.
No, I don't think that... Much more, I don't think the point of... I want to just give an intuitive... Well, I'll try to develop a little bit by these Rambams. That intuitive sense that... I can't prove it, you know? But that intuitive sense is that when you involve yourself in things that have only significant in value for the moment, you're not really cultivating your soul. You're not really developing your soul and your mind and your personality, your character traits. And when you do, but when you do the opposite, you involve yourself in Chayei Olam, things that do have these permanent values, like your character traits and Chachmas HaTorah and Mitzvos, so you're developing something that is more significant, has more value than any particular moment. Right, like we said, the Torah is true now, it's true in the future. We've been learning these halachos in the future and in the past also, right? So it is that those kinds of activities are through those through which you're Zocha to Chayei Olam Haba. Okay, those activities that are more than just a particular moment. Chayei Olam is an eternal existence. So that's only for people who have developed their souls to the point where they have something in their soul that's eternal, where they don't just have a life of taiva and pettiness and momentary existence, where they know how to exist in something that's not just a temporary moment. Chachma, mitzvos, right? God. Okay, fine. So this parak is the Rambam trying to explain the brachos and klaus of the Torah. Okay? So I'm going to start a little bit in the middle. So where the Rambam tries to explain, so he says the Chayei Olam Haba is the ultimate reward, but what is these brachos and klaus that the Torah tells a person that are always in this world? Okay? So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nasan Lanu Torah. It's in the middle of Aleph, but he says, God gave us a Torah, Zu Eitz HaChayim. It's the tree of life. Okay? Because it's the the way to get to a real existence, to be alive and real, is through the Torah. If you don't have the Torah, you're not going to be real. You're going to be an illusion. Your life is going to be an illusion. It's going to be a fantasy. A real existence, the Eitz HaChaim, Torah is the Eitz HaChaim. It gives you a path to have a real existence. The way to be Zocha Chaim HaBa is to know the Torah and to understand it. Okay, according to your actions, the greatness of your actions and your chachma, your zocha to this eternal life. If we're constantly involved in the, if we're constantly involved in the chachma of the Torah, and we besimcha, we're happy and we enjoy it. The God will remove all the impediments from doing it. Sickness, war, hunger, right? So you'll be satiated, you'll have peace, money, right? All this great stuff everybody's looking for. Okay? If you engage in Chaye Shah, you don't have that. If you engage in Chaye Olam, you get the stuff. You get the satiate, the physical satiation, a full belly, and you have the peaceful world, and you get the money. Right? A lot of Kesev and Zav. Why? Not for the purpose of being involved in the temporal existence. No, other opposite. You don't have to spend your whole life working. Okay, good. If we abandon the Torah and we are osik, we're obsessed, we get involved in the illusion of time. Okay, heavily asman is exactly what Rambam was referring to earlier, the illusion of time, of the present, of things that only exist for the moment, which Shofar is trying to break you out of. But if you get caught up in that kind of a life, that Klal Yisrael, we get fat and we rebel, right? We get fat on all the taivas and then we live, we rebel against the eternal God and we are only involved in the temporal existence. So then you remove the Olam Hazeh. A person loses this world. Okay, fine. Okay, good. Nimsa perish kolos in abrachos v'kolos al derech zu. Kolomar. Im avaratas es Hashem b'simcha u'shmartim darko. If you serve God with happily, you recognize this is really a good, doing the mitzvahs is a good for us, it's a benefit for us. Mashpi alechem abrachos elo machir kolos anshetina p'nuyim l'ischakim b'torah v'lasok ba. To can be involved in learning the chachma, the wisdom of the Torah, and be osik and involved in it. And it will be good for you in a world that's kulo tov, all good, and a world that's all that's long. It's extension. It's of length, eternal length, infinite length. Kulo aruch. Okay, as opposed to living in a temporal existence that's just one moment. Olam haba is something that's olam. The way you get to something olam is through being involved in chai olam, things that aren't just significant. In a moment, v'nimtzasim zochin l'shnei olamim l'chaim tovim ba'olam hazeh hamevi'in l'chaim haba. Okay, and this is the Torah's formula. Torah's formula is not to abandon this world and simply to be engaged in chayolam haba, trying to acquire chayolam haba. But the objective of the Torah is that you should have both. If you engage in a life which is removed from the stupid pettiness of the now and the temporal, and you're involved in perfecting your midos, in doing tshuva, and learning the Chachmas Torah, it's a good life in this world. You will have something. Your now, right now, will benefit your now in the future. And you will carry something with you, and you will end up having Chayel Mazeh. And you will have Chayel Maba. You will have both worlds. Okay? If you don't do Chachmas Tovim here, you're not going to get it. There's no other way to get it besides this. If you abandon God and you involve yourself in the illusions of the present, right, which is eating, drinking, no sexual relations, and everything that comes under this category, whose value is only limited to the particular present moment, the pleasures of the moment. Maybe Alechem Kol Klaus Elu Meser Kol Brachos. You lose all the good, you get all the bad. Ach Yichli Yemechem Behalo Pachad. Your life is filled with anxiety, terror, depression. That's what ends up happening. V'lo Yichem Leiv Panoi V'lo Guf Shalem Lasos Hamitzvah Kadesha Tavdu Mechalim Abba. V'nintu Shevatim Shnei Olamos. If you engage in a stupid world involved in the now, you're not going to have either world. Your life is going to be miserable. You're going to be depressed. You're not going to have any satisfaction. Each moment has no benefit for the next. You have no cumulative gains. You can't build upon yourself. You never cultivate your soul. Your soul never flourishes. You never become anything more than you are, just a shallow, hollow existence moving from one moment to the next. You don't have Olam Hazeh. You don't have Olam Haba.
There's an irony there. I think the way most people view this decision is, am I going to go with Olam Hazeh or Olam Haba?
Exactly.
What he's saying is, the decision is, do you want neither or do you want both?
Exactly. That's the thing.
That's
not the way people look at it.
That's a huge difference.
Right. But the idea when Chazal say you should not engage in Chaye Shah, but you should engage in Chaye Olam, they don't mean give up Olam Hazeh and only have Olam Haba. What they're saying is Chaye Shah means the stupid existence of people who are sleeping in their life and they're always engaged in the Hevle Azman, this illusion of the present. And the present is real and the present is important and that's what they're involved in. That's Chaye Shah. But Chaye Olam means the Chachmas HaTorah, things that are eternal, things that have value outside of a particular moment, the mitzvos, the Zichru Borachem, remember your creator, do tshuva, change your ways, change your actions, change how you think. That's Chaye Olam. But when you involve yourself in Chaye Olam, when you involve yourself in something more significant than a particular moment, what you end up having is Chaye Olam Hazeh, you get this world, you have a much better life in this world, each moment builds upon the next and you carry something with you. Okay, and you get Chayal Mabah because you've cultivated your soul, you've made something of yourself, you've built up a structure in your soul that has some permanence to it, and you have an ability to exist in a more permanent way, as opposed to a shallow person who simply is not Shaykh Chayal Mabah. A person who has no depth of personality, their whole existence is tied to a particular moment, how can they exist in a world that's Kulo Aruch? They have no Shaykhs to it. Their existence doesn't translate into a world of Chayal and to Olam Mabah. Again, that's the message of the Torah. She's manch adam tarid ba'olam hazeh b'chol imelcham v'ravon enim es asik lo b'chach lo mitzvos shebehen zochel chayim habah. If you engage in the life of Chaye Olam and you abandon on your Rosh Hashanah when you hear the shofar, you abandon the illusion, the heavenly azman, which has no basis philosophically, psychologically, physically, this thing that anything that has a moment, this particular stupid moment of your particular life, and the people that are going on in this particular day, what they're saying, the news that's going on, or the taiva that you're engaged in, if you abandon that kind of life, which is obsessed and steeped in that, and you realize that I could use this particular moment to engage in something that has an eternal value, then you'll end up having both worlds. You'll end up having a much better existence as you get older, because you'll have developed skills and something that will allow you to enjoy something. Something that's much greater, much greater value than a shallow taiva, and you'll also be zochah to chayim haba. Okay, any questions?
Yeah,
very good.